Ukraine's president places the blame squarely on Russia for a collapsed dam catastrophe.
They did it intentionally. First, to blackmail the world. Second, to blow up the dam and use the flood as a weapon.
Plus, the breach could have major implications for the global hunger crisis.
The destruction of the Kakhovka Dam and hydroelectric power station has raised concerns about disruptions to Ukraine's affordable supplies of wheat, barley, corn, and sunflower oil.
And later in the program, one woman's idea for raising money for Ukraine.
Piece by piece, slowly but surely, Ukrainian historical buildings and cultural monuments are coming together in these unique puzzles.
Today's Wednesday, June 7th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London in Washington. A continuing nightmare in southern Ukraine. As floodwaters from a collapsed dam kept rising on Wednesday, the dam lies in a part of the Kherson region, which has been occupied by the Kremlin's forces for the past year. I got an update from Anna Chernikova, who's reporting from Kyiv. Anna, this is obviously a very serious situation for people in the area. What can you tell us?
Ukrainian rescue service coming from all over Ukraine to Kherson region to rescue people, and also a lot of volunteers joining. We should divide this situation into right bank of the river of Kherson, which is under Ukrainian control, and left bank of the river, which is under Russian control. Situation with evacuation from left bank is very complicated. People are not allowed to get out. Russian forces do not let people go through the checkpoint. And unfortunately, the rough footage from locals that some people in some areas which suffer from the flood the most, some people had to spend night on the roofs of their houses because this is the only way to survive. If we're talking about the right bank of the river, which is under Ukrainian control, the evacuation is still ongoing. Not only people, but also animals are evacuated. It was a big issue about the zoo in Novakakhovka. Some animals survived, but a lot of animals unfortunately died. Also, the evacuation is still ongoing for the moment. Ukrainian authorities confirmed that at least over 1,800 buildings have been flooded on the right bank of the river, and water is still coming. So for a couple of days, for more days, the level of water will grow. In a couple of days, it is expected that water will stop to grow, and maybe even the level of water will start to reduce. For the moment, over 1,500 people have been already evacuated.
And Anna, it sounds like even as people were evacuating and escaping the floods, the shelling continues, and of course the war in general continues, and I understand there may be an update of some sort from Bakhmut.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And actually, I forgot to mention that during the evacuation from Kherson yesterday, it was also shelling by Russian forces, and especially in the morning, which also complicated the evacuation. In terms of Bakhmut, we have some updates, official updates from the Ukrainian authorities. The Deputy Minister of Defense confirmed that Ukrainian forces started to advance in certain area in Bakhmut direction. So we're talking about the area, not particularly the city of Bakhmut, because we look at it as Bakhmut direction. And Ms. Mahler confirmed that in some areas, Ukrainian forces managed to advance from 200 meters to over 1 kilometer.
This is the first official update we've had in many days.
We can see that definitely activity on the front line is ongoing, and also we're hearing that in general, front line is quite active at this point.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. The Kakhovka hydroelectric dam and reservoir is one of the largest in the world and essential for the supply of drinking water and irrigation to a huge area of southern Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday accused Moscow of intentionally destroying the dam.
The Kakhovka reservoir provided drinking water to a huge part of Ukraine, cities and villages with hundreds of thousands of people. It also supplied water to farmers for agricultural production in the south and center of Ukraine.
Zelensky also called it a criminal act of ecocide, with damage to the environment that could take decades to recover from.
Evacuation of people from the flooded area is ongoing. Almost 80 settlements are under threat. An oil slick of at least 150 tons formed and was taken by the current to the Black Sea. We cannot yet predict how much of the chemicals, fertilizers, and oil products stored in the flooded areas will end up in the rivers and sea.
Russia has also blamed Ukraine for the destruction. At a news conference on Wednesday, National Security Council spokesman John Kirby addressed reporter questions as to whether the U.S. believes Russian forces destroyed the dam.
We've seen the reports that Russia was responsible for the explosion at the dam, which I would remind, Russian forces took over illegally last year and have been occupying since then. We're doing the best we can to assess those reports, and we are working with the Ukrainians to gather more information. But we cannot say conclusively what happened at this point.
Kirby was also asked about how the dam's destruction might impact Ukraine's fight against Russia.
Right now, the immediate focus is rightly on all the Ukrainians whose lives and towns and villages are affected by this flooding and making sure that they have the aid and assistance that they need. But right now, too soon to assess what kind of impact it's going to have on the battlefield.
Meanwhile, local and international aid groups are on the ground working to respond to the growing humanitarian emergency. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Tuesday that at least 16,000 people have already lost their homes. I spoke with Achille Dupre, spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross delegation in Ukraine, for that part of the story.
What's clear is that the destruction of this dam in Nova Kakhovka and the floods that result from it pose a really great threat to civilians, to their lives, to their homes, and to their livelihoods. We're talking about thousands that are in a dire humanitarian situation. And let's not forget that these communities have been, for the past 15 months, already in a difficult humanitarian situation due to ongoing military hostilities next to them. So the situation right now is quite dire. We have our partners and colleagues from the Ukrainian Red Cross that are on the ground today. They have evacuated 800 civilians from the zones that have been flooded, including over 60 that are people with low mobility. So we see that people need to obviously evacuate from the flooded areas. Houses have been destroyed as a result of the flooding.
What are some of the greatest needs that you're seeing and the obstacles you're facing in meeting those needs?
For now, we are in very close contact with the local authorities, with the Ukrainian Red Cross, which is on the ground, and with also the emergency services. And one thing that should be said is that the communities there were also, they had contingency plans. So a lot of the things are working quite well in terms of evacuating people away from the flooded areas. But of course, to get people who are affected by this in a relatively safer area. And that's what is being done in coordination with the authorities. Now, if you think about it in more medium term, in such cases, there is always difficulties that are arising in terms of access to water. If you think about it in terms of upstream from the dam and then downstream from the dam, there's the risk of flood.
Do you see this as something of this scale, that it will take a long time for any sort of normalcy and recovery from this type of situation?
It's very, very difficult to answer, because the consequences of this are still unpredictable in many ways. But we see that the flooding now is ongoing, but hopefully in the next few days, the level of water will start to decrease again. But it's very, very difficult to evaluate at this point how long-term we're talking in terms of consequences, because there can also be other consequences of humanitarian concern. For example, we can think about the effects that this has on agricultural land. Also, there's the whole issue related to explosive weapons and mines that are around this territory that may have moved as a result of the flooding. So there are lots of humanitarian issues that may arise in the coming days, weeks, months. And so far, we're just following the situation very closely with the authorities to see how we can best support the communities on the ground and if they need our help. We have seen, sadly, in the past 15 months in Ukraine, and we have seen that damages to civilian infrastructure can create really a lot of civilian suffering and can plunge communities into really tragic humanitarian situation. And as far as international humanitarian law, the law of armed conflict is concerned, it's very clear that civilian infrastructure, including dams, enjoy specific protection. And it's for us as a humanitarian organization and also as the guardian of the rules of war, is paramount that the belligerent, the state parties to this conflict, respect these protections. And it highlights once again the importance of the rules of war to be respected because we see the tragic consequences.
Akhil Dupre, spokesperson for the International Committee of the Red Cross delegation in Ukraine. Ukrainian officials are also on alert as flooding from the reservoir threatens the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. The plant, which has been occupied by Russian troops for some time, uses water from the reservoir to cool its reactors. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze has the story.
The Kakhovka hydroelectric dam blew up and partly collapsed on Tuesday, causing the release of water from the reservoir used to cool the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power station. IAEA Director General Rafael Marino Grossi said the destruction posed no immediate risk to the nuclear plant, but said the situation remains extremely volatile.
The IAEA staff on the site have been informed that the damage to the Nova Kakhovka dam is currently leading to about 5 centimeters per hour reduction in the height of the reservoir.
Mark Zhelezniak is a professor at Fukushima University's Institute of Environmental Radioactivity.
Water release and water level in Kakhovka reservoir is diminishing. We providing risk assessment calculation, and this calculation demonstrates that after several days, it would depend from the size of this breach in the dam. The water level in Kakhovka reservoirs could be such low that the water intake for cooling pond will be dry.
However, since Zaporizhzhia's reactors were shut down, Zhelezniak told VOA there is no immediate risk to the station, but the plants still need a cooling mechanism, and there are concerns about how the plant is being run because it's been occupied by Russian forces for more than a year. Petro Kotin, president of Ukraine's state-run nuclear company Energoatom, told VOA that the number of Russian military personnel at the nuclear plant now exceeds the number of personnel who serve the station.
The situation is worsening all the time. The station starting right from the beginning of the occupation, which was on March 4th last year, they came to Energoatom to install the actually regime when the soldiers are making all the management actually on site.
Kotin, who operated the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant for more than 3 decades, said that Russian forces pressured and intimidated personnel.
There were some, you know, beating of the personnel, and they also captured the staff and put them in the jail and their cages, and then they had all type of tortures in there. And some people were killed, some people missed, and we do not know where they are at the moment.
While Ukrainian energy officials say they are watching the station, they don't have control over what happens there. A security worker at the plant, who identified himself only as Valentin, for his own safety, spoke to VOA by phone.
The biggest danger is that the nuclear station is transformed into a fully functioning military base. They built defense lines there and brought a lot of military equipment there. The people who run the station don't understand what they are dealing with. They see the station as a point of defense, but the nuclear station is not, and this most likely will not end up without a serious man-made disaster.
Experts warn any missteps could lead to radiation emission, with potentially catastrophic consequences reaching far and wide across Europe, Russia, and the Mediterranean. Ukraine's energy minister Herman Halushchenko agrees.
And each day it changed because of the wind. But we see that the clouds, in some days, because of the wind, could cover Turkey, Russia, Moldova, Romania, Hungary, Poland, Belarus.
He says the World Nuclear Watchdog should act swiftly to avoid a possible disaster.
When the shelling has happened, and the unit is on diesel. So some accidental missiles could just destroy the diesel, and that's it. And that's the end. And no discussion. Who is that is Ukraine or that is Russia to blame who? I mean, it's not matter who would be blamed. The question that is millions of people would suffer from this.
IAEA officials are closely monitoring developments and are planning their next visit to Zaporizhia as early as mid-June. Maroslava Gongadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
Global prices for wheat and corn have soared after the dam collapse in Ukraine, renewing market fears about the fragility of the country's ability to ship food internationally. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma has more.
The destruction of the Kakhovka Dam and hydroelectric power station has raised concerns about disruptions to Ukraine's affordable supplies of wheat, barley, corn and sunflower oil, getting to developing nations where people are struggling with hunger and high food prices. Wheat prices gained 2.4% in early trading on Tuesday on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange to $6.39 a bushel, while the cost of corn rose more than 1%. The higher prices earlier in the day had faded later. Joseph Glauber at the International Food Policy Research Institute says anytime this war shows signs of getting further escalated, there's a lot of concern and markets react to that. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Laurie London. The war in Ukraine was top of UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's agenda Wednesday as he started a two-day trip to Washington, with the dam breach giving the subject added urgency. The US and UK are the two biggest military donors to Ukraine, and the war will be the focus of Sunak's meeting Thursday at the White House with President Joe Biden. Talks are also likely to include extra air defense measures against Russian bombardment as Ukraine launches a counteroffensive to retake occupied territory. The South African government says a six-member team of leaders from the continent will head to Russia and Ukraine in mid-June on a peace mission to end the war in Eastern Europe. Spokespersons for President Cyril Ramaphosa told VOA the team is set to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv as a starting point. Darren Taylor reports.
The South African president's representatives say he's in regular contact with Putin and Zelensky about the African peace mission. They say Ramaphosa, plus the leaders of Egypt, Republic of Congo, Senegal, Uganda, and Zambia, are going to draw up a roadmap toward ending the Ukraine war. The African leaders met Monday and said their first objective would be to secure a ceasefire and thereafter a lasting peace in the region. John Stremlau is a former United States diplomat to several African countries and currently professor of international relations at Wits University in Johannesburg. He says Africa has a vested interest in stopping the war in Ukraine as soon as possible.
The real concern that should be uppermost in our mind is getting a peaceful resolution of this god-awful crisis that is causing such devastation and so much human suffering, and then the collateral damage to Africa in grain exports here and fuel and other commodities that are driving our inflation that is so bad.
Stremlau says it's very interesting but not surprising that it appears as if South Africa is leading the peace mission. The African National Congress, the ANC government, has faced global criticism for its close ties with Moscow and refusal to condemn Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Even as the war has raged, South Africa has hosted the Russian Navy for joint military exercises and dispatched its top army general to the Kremlin to discuss military cooperation. The United States has accused the Ramaphosa administration of selling weapons to Russia. Pretoria says it's investigating the allegation. Given this context, some analysts say it's difficult to imagine Ukraine regarding the African peace mission as impartial. At a media briefing Tuesday, South Africa's Deputy Minister of International Relations, Alvin Buertas, said it's because of Africa's neutrality that the peace initiative has a chance of success.
We have heard even President Zelensky, President Putin, welcome any intervention on de-escalation. And that is our departure point. So these peace missions from the African continent indeed are welcome. And we wish
Puerto says the African mediation team wants to help end the fighting for the sake of the entire world, not just for Africa.
I think the issues about this war in Europe after the COVID-19 pandemic have brought us in a situation where economies worldwide have lost traction. There's increased food insecurity, increased poverty. So I think we are hopeful and we are confident that the peace envoys ultimately will enable the de-escalation of conflict.
In a recent interview with South African State Television, United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said her government welcomed any peace initiative aimed at ending the conflict in Eastern Europe. But she attached one non-negotiable condition, that every country involved in the talks understands that Russia is the aggressor. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year, people all over the world have been coming up with innovative ways to raise money for the eventual rebuilding of the country. One woman is selling puzzles of Ukrainian buildings and monuments that have since been destroyed or damaged. Scenes from the past to help Ukraine piece together what was lost. Maria Prus has the story.
Piece by piece, slowly but surely, Ukrainian historical buildings and cultural monuments are coming together in these unique puzzles. A company called Ukrainian Puzzles is selling them. Its founder, Irina Zhurba, says any profits go to Ukrainian reconstruction foundations.
The puzzles are all produced in Ukraine, and we export most of them to North America. This is not just some goods we produce. This is a means of communication, us showing the world what's happening in Ukraine, what monuments are being destroyed.
The company recently added new puzzles depicting subjects like the AN-225 Mriya plane, Mariupol Theater, Kharkiv University, and Kyiv TV Tower. Each puzzle costs about $25. So far, her company has sold over 1,000 puzzles, and 1,000 more are in production.
Our puzzles are available all over the world, except for Russia and Belarus, of course.
One of Zhurba's most loyal customers is Bunny Druki, the mother of U.S. volunteer Alex Druki, who joined Ukraine's armed forces after the Russian invasion. He was taken prisoner by the Russians and came back to the U.S. in September after a prisoner swap. Bunny Druki says she is doing what she can to spread information about the war among Americans and help Ukraine.
I have been buying the Ukrainian puzzles, which I absolutely love. They're beautiful, and it breaks my heart to look at the picture inside and see how those beautiful buildings look now.
Druki is also encouraging her friends to donate money to help Ukraine.
There was an enormous tornado that came through my town about 12 years ago, and we are still trying to rebuild from that. So I have an idea of how difficult it's going to be to rebuild Ukraine.
Zhurba hopes her company becomes a successful Ukrainian brand, and she is already planning puzzles dedicated to Ukrainian art and scenic spots throughout the country. Maria Prus, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Lori London.
This is the voice. of America. Washington, D.C.